Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. Coming up later in today's program, we've got Dayton Youth Radio and Bill Felker with this week's Poor Will's Almanac and some good news for just one of Dayton's five sister city committees. We'll tell you about that. Up first, last week we told you how some Dayton groups, including Rainbow Elder Care, Public Health Dayton and Montgomery County, and Boonshoff Pride and others are collecting data to gauge the unique needs of the older LGBT community. Our story featured three people who had genuine concerns about their futures as they get older. In our conversations, we also talked about other aspects of their lives, coming out to family and friends and to themselves. We talked about the ideals of community and culture and wanted to share just a little bit more of these people with you as they shared themselves with us, for which we are grateful. Here are Janice, Joyce, and Dickie.
My name is Janice James. I'm a native Daytonian, born and raised here. And I've been out in this community since I was 18, old enough to go to the bars to drink 3-2 beer. But actually kind of came out to myself around my mother brought me out to myself about the age of 13. So I was in love with my next-door neighbor, my best friend. And she called me down in the basement one day. She was doing laundry, and she had one of these How to Raise Your Children books, and it was a page on homosexuality, and she handed me the book, and she said, "Is that the way that you feel about this person?" And I read it and said, "Yes." And she said, "Okay, just don't tell your father." And so I immediately had to go to the dictionary and look up a whole bunch of words that I didn't know. I've always found the city of Dayton to be pretty accepting. I mean, when I first came out, there was still a lot of harassments of gays, lesbians, whatever, you know, leaving the bars at night, cops waiting to nab you and get you on DUI or whatever, you know, things of that nature. But overall, I think the city has been pretty accepting. There's usually been a fair number of lesbian bars going on. And what's been interesting as the culture has changed is that there's less of a gay and lesbian culture in the city. Gay bars are not very existent anymore. I mean, I don't know any that's exclusively a lesbian bar. It's changed, it's progressed. I did do a fill-in for a time where I started the Lavender Dinner Club with a friend and then ended up running it myself for, 5 years or so. Just because there was a hole for lesbian culture, and now it's like with the fall of DOMA, it's so normalized things that it's hard to find the culture anymore, but I still see a lot of acceptance, and I'll tell anyone I've probably faced more discrimination as a woman than I have as a lesbian, primarily because I was in the closet most of my life too, but still, even out of it now, it doesn't seem to be an issue.
My name is Joyce Gibbs. I have lived in Dayton off and on for a number of years, most recently been here 17 years when Janice and I got together. Well, we met at a dinner club that Janice was actually hosting at that time. It used to be called the Lavender Dinner Club, and a friend took me. I was in my coming out process. It was much later in life than Janice's. And the friend said, you really need to come to this with me. You really need to come. You'll meet a lot of nice people. I said, no, I can't do that. I'm not ready for that. I really can't do that. And she said, yes, you really need to come. So I went and I met Janice, who was with someone else at that time. But eventually we just kept bumping into each other. And it was good. I got to see her in groups of other people with friends, and I said, "Hey, she's pretty nice." So we moved in together 17 years ago. I tried a different route. I remember when I was coming out, I went to the Unitarian Fellowship and really hoped that I would meet people. It was a welcoming congregation. We attended there for a bit. We had a commitment ceremony there when we first got together. But I don't have that experience. I'll tell you, we're really fortunate that for a time we both worked for the same company, and we were both very out there and very open, and it was great. People there respected us as a couple. It was really wonderful. And I can't say that exists everywhere. Mm-hmm. There have been times when I haven't been out at work. It's one of those things that you, as people, it's kind of a cliche, but you're always coming out as a person. You got to decide when you meet somebody, am I going to tell them who I really am, or am I just going to pretend like I'm what they want me to be?
My given name is Richard Wilson, but I have gone by Dick Wilson most of my life. And when I came out, I discovered that if I went by Dickie Wilson, I could almost instantly see on a person's face whether they were friendly or foe, friend or foe. And so that's why I call myself Dickie Wilson now. When I introduce myself, I just stick out my hand, say I'm Dickie Wilson, and if they smile and continue on, then I know they're a friend. That's how that name came about. I was born in Dayton at St. Elizabeth Hospital, 1941, and this house is the house that I grew up in. And after Dad and Mom passed away, I moved back in and remodeled it and have lived here ever since. So, went to Belmont High School. That's where I first found out that I was gay in my sophomore year. I had wrote a letter to one of my classmates, and somehow I mentioned that I thought somebody in the class was very cute, and that went around the school, and they instantly knew what I was, and the next morning, I sort of got roughed up at lunch, but I didn't know why, and so the next morning, I asked another person what happened, and she said, well, they think you're a homosexual. And I didn't even know what that was. This would have been in 1957, and the spring of 1957. And so I went to the library to look it up in the dictionary. The only thing in the dictionary in the library was that a homosexual was someone that likes their own kind. It's the only information I could find. So immediately I realized it must be a bad thing, and so I started listening and keeping my ears open, and I watched everyone belittle Liberace in the 50s, and so I just got a job at NCR, and I was totally in the closet, tried to be in the closet, but a lot of people realized that I wasn't like they are, but I tried to convince myself. I joined a Playboy Club to disguise everything. I bought a Corvette, tried to play the straight role just to keep people from belittling me, and I had a number of friends that when they did find out that I was gay, they just abandoned me, just totally abandoned me. So that's what led me into the closet, and it was a long process. I knew that there was nothing I could do or gay people could do about themselves, that we are the way we are. And so as society gradually became a little more open and open and open, I knew I was going to have to come out of the closet. And then in 1995, I went to Detroit, Michigan to the Task Force Creating Change Conference, and that changed my life forever. They educated us as to what the trend was in the gay community and the way things were working through the courts and through society. And when I came back from that, I came out at General Motors a few months later and started thinking of what could I do to help the community, and the first thing was domestic partner benefits.
Mm-hmm. the thoughts and words of Janice James, Joyce Gibbs, and Dickie Wilson. Just a small part of the stories they had to share with us, and we hope you enjoyed them. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. Next year, we'll mark the 25th anniversary of the signing of the Dayton Peace Accords, one of a series of international meetings that led to the end of the Bosnian War. Since its signing, efforts to build a relationship between Dayton and its sister city, Sarajevo, have continued. And now a sizable grant from the U.S. State Department will go a long way in cementing that relationship. To find out more about all this, we spoke to City Commissioner Matt Joseph, who was a member of the Sister City Committee that flew to Sarajevo in 2016, and Arch Grieve with the Dayton Mediation Center. He's made two trips to the Sister City and is leading the exchange program that the funding from this grant will help facilitate.
Sister Cities was founded with on the premise that citizen diplomacy matters, meaning people to people in various countries can make or break whether their countries are at peace or not. And in this case, this is a country that had been at war, and for the last almost 25 years now has been relatively at peace, but there's still some things that need to happen there. They went through, even before the war, they were going through a transition from what had been communism or pseudo-communism to a more Western-style democracy. So those transitions were happening in the economy, in the mindset of the people, and everything at the same time as the war was going on and after. So this program is specifically designed to help introduce these students, these 18 students, to how we behave here in America, how we make change happen. And we believe we put together a nice program to bring them here and help them with that. And that, combined with our history with Bosnia and Herzegovina, the fact that the peace accords were signed here to stop the war, and that we've had in the subsequent years a ton of activities with them going back and forth, that makes this a special program.
Tell me a little bit about the logistics of planning this. It's this is going to happen in September, October of 2019, so you're going to be busy for the next couple of months trying to get all this planned out.
Absolutely. Right now, what we're trying to do is find host families. And so for the past few months, I've been working on trying to get together a bunch of partners that could help out with programming. And we think we've got a really great group of organizations and individuals to actually, create the program that they'll be doing. But right now, we're in the mode of trying to find people that will actually host all these folks coming over. So that's what we're doing now.
Oh, that's great. And you both were there in 2016. I'd like to have your impressions on your visit there.
I love the country. It's beautiful. The people are very generous. The food is great. The culture is fascinating. The mountains are beautiful. I think I always want to lead with that, because too often people's impressions of Bosnia and Herzegovina are just governed by the war, which is over 25 years ago almost now. Things are different. Things are repaired. The thing that hasn't been repaired yet is the fact that the Constitution there, which was put in place here in Dayton, hasn't been modified very much. And it needs to be completely overhauled by the Bosnian-Herzegovinian people themselves. And that still hasn't happened. My impression of the country hasn't changed in the last few years. It's wonderful. But this program, I think, will help to get to some of the structural issues that are preventing more prosperity, better lives for the people of Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Arch, what was your experience over there?
I loved my experience there. This is the only country in Europe that I've been to more than once, and so I just fell in love with it when we went there in 2016 and caught the bug, I guess. And so I'm really excited to be able to return, especially when we go over and do the orientation before the students and teachers come.
Commissioner, you mentioned that it's been 25 years since the war, and I'm interested in your take on the spirit of the people there today and what they've come through.
That's an interesting question. It's been, like you say, it's actually 24 years. It'll be 25 next year. And I think that people are really focused now on the normal things that people focus on, which is they're worried about the education their kids are getting. They're worried about a job or a lack of a job. They're worried about retirement. They're worried about the trash pickup, water. So really it's just the normal things that people worry about every day, and that's good, I mean, in a way. The problem is that because of the structural issues that are in place, it's a little bit more difficult for them right now, and there are more of those issues. So it's not as easy to fix. It takes a little more effort, a little more dedication. And one of the things that Arch is going to do with his program is to try to give these kids a glimpse of how we do that here and maybe some of the tools they need to start making changes like that over there.
You've got some teachers coming with them, correct?
That's correct, yeah. And I'm, as a former teacher, too, that's something that I'm really passionate about. So we're trying to organize the whole experience, almost like a project-based learning type experience for the students. And so we're going to have an essential question, which is, what does it mean to affect change in a democracy? And they're going to go through and look at that here in Columbus and even in D.C. while they're here.
It's exciting news. What else should we know about the Sister City program or this trip? We'd certainly like to follow up in October during their visit.
People should definitely apply to become host families, and they can do that by visiting our website at DaytonSisterCityCommittee.org.
Final comments?
I'm happy that you're coming to talk to us about this. This is another one in a series of events that are going on. We have older students coming over, college students just after college to do internships, entrepreneurship classes. We have students from here going over there. We have delegations going back and forth. We're working with a couple of the cities in Bosnia and Herzegovina to give them some of our technical knowledge in areas like water or brownfields development, and we're learning from them too. So there's a lot going on. This is just one in a series of things that are happening.
Dayton City Commissioner Matt Joseph and Arch Grieve with the Dayton Mediation Center, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry Kenny. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Bob Dylan, The Clash, and many other musicians resonated with the teenagers of their eras. And today's teens have their own artists whose music inspires and heals. Today's Dayton Youth Radio story comes with a soundtrack. Here's project coordinator Basim Blunt.
Many teenagers credit J. Cole with being an inspiration in their lives. Today's producer tells us how J. Cole's music inspired him through a tough time in his life.
My name is Max Lightcap. I'm 18, a senior at Centerville High School. There's some things that have happened that many of my friends don't know about. Ever since my early youth, it's just been me, my dad, and my sister Brandy at home. My sister left when I was like 7 for college, then entered the military. She has been more of a female role model than my mom has. I used to see my mom pretty regularly when I was younger, but now it's a rare occasion. One of the happiest moments I had when I was a child was when my sister came home for Christmas. My dad was in the hospital, but he was able to come home for Christmas too. It was so awesome to have my whole family there. The best present I received was the smallest one, these two dog tags that said, Easy Company, Max Lightcap. Then on the other, it said, I will always be there, Brandy. I brought those dog tags everywhere I went, so I could remember she was always with me, no matter if she was in Iraq or just a room away. When I lost those dog tags in 5th grade, it was like everything slowly, gradually started going downhill. My dad and I have never been the wealthiest of families, but we got by. That was until March of 2016, when my dad wasn't able to come up with the rent. I knew we were going to get evicted, but it didn't really sink in until it actually happened. We ended up having to stay with my sister's best friend's mom, Cindy. Very confusing, I know. I was really not used to living in this environment. It was almost like I was living in two different worlds. At school, I always had a lunch, yet at home, when we couldn't afford milk, my dad told me to pour water in my cereal. Stuff like this really made me realize what position we were in. Then for about a week, I escaped everything and had some great experiences on my mission trip in Blue Ridge, Georgia. But when I got back, my dad and Cindy got in a huge fight and she forced us to leave. All my clothes and belongings were on the back porch, just thrown into trash bags. Other stuff that didn't fit in the bags was just scattered on the porch. Some things were even cracked and broken. We which is exactly how I felt at the time, cracked and broken. We ended up staying at a Studio 6 motel by the mall that night. We'd be staying at that motel for the rest of the summer. That summer, I listened to more music than I ever had in my entire life. It was mostly rap music, but it was really helping me get through a tough time, especially the artist J. Cole. Cole's music really changed me as a person. It taught me to be more selfless, especially when dealing with tough situations with my family.
Hey, look, heaven or hell, you choose. Freedom or jail, you lose. I can't stop them as hot as the devil's shoes. Overcame a low life status to blow like Gladys. Ahead of my time, like I lived my whole life backwards. I'm nothing like his whole.
I really connected to his music because it felt as if he was speaking into my life. He wasn't just another artist to me. I felt many of the same struggles he discusses in his music.
I keep my head high. I got my wings to carry me. I don't know freedom. I want my dreams to rescue me.
Right before school started my sophomore year, my dad and I gathered up the money to live in an apartment in Centerville. We've lived there for 2 years now, and I'm so thankful to everyone who helped us out in this situation. And of course, for J. Cole for being a huge role model to me and keeping my head up with his awesome music. To this day, that summer was the most impactful in my life because without it, I wouldn't be the man that I am today. For Dayton Youth Radio at Centerville High School, this is Max Lightcap.
That was a thesis on J. Cole, written and produced by Max Lightcap, a senior at Centerville High School. Special thanks to Tricia Raypock. You can find links to J. Cole's music at WYSO.org. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basim Blunt.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. You can find more Dayton Youth Radio stories online at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. This is WYSO Weekend. Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley delivered her State of the City address on Wednesday morning, her sixth since taking office. The mayor's speech tackled some of the difficult issues facing the city in the coming year. The more than 20-minute address began with some positives for the city. She outlined milestones reached by the city in education, business, downtown revitalization, and neighborhood investment. The mayor also talked about some of the challenges. These include the opioid crisis and the recent loss of Good Samaritan Hospital. Here is an excerpt from that Wednesday morning address.
And in the face of serious challenges, we've also seen neighbors pull together. After the announcement that Good Samaritan Hospital will close, residents along the Salem Avenue corridor emerged as tireless advocates for their neighborhood. As we work to find a permanent use for Good Sam site, we will continue to listen to the concerns of neighborhood residents and do what we can to stabilize these neighborhoods. To that end, the city has committed $19.6 million over the next 6 years for the continued demolition of blighted residential and commercial properties, exterior repairs for homeowners, and the complete reconstruction of Salem Avenue. We know that there is still much more work to do to rebuild our neighborhoods, particularly in West Dayton. That community has been ground zero for many of our city's hardest challenges, as the legacy of discriminatory policies and practices continue to play out. Understandably, some residents in West Dayton feel left out and left behind. That is why the city has been supporting numerous efforts to encourage responsible and inclusive development in that community. One critical project is the redevelopment of DeSoto Bass and Hilltop Homes, two large public housing complexes into mixed income neighborhoods of opportunity. Greater Dayton Premier Management, Citywide Development, and the City of Dayton have been working closely for several years to lay the groundwork for reinvestment in these communities. This collaborative was awarded a HUD Choice Planning Grant and last summer released the Renew Miami Chapel Plan that incorporated the feedback of over 500 community stakeholders. We are now in the process to raise the local matching funds that will make Dayton competitive for a $30 million choice implementation grant. The city has also been supportive of efforts to redevelop a large brownfield site that is nearby that also just happens to be the home of the first airplane factory in the United States. We are working in partnership with the National Aviation Heritage Area and the National Park Service, who plan to turn the Wright Brothers factory into a museum. Dayton Metro Library also plans to build its new West Side branch on the site, closely connecting the neighborhood with this new development.
Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley in her Wednesday morning State of the City address at City Hall. You can hear the full address online at WISO.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the final week of late winter. It's the second week of the skunk courting moon and the fourth week of the sun in Aquarius. And it's almost early spring. It's time to be getting ready. So when you hear morning doves singing before dawn, then organize all your buckets for tapping maple sap. And when you hear red-winged blackbirds whistling in the wetlands, then the maple sap should already be running. When titmice and cardinals sing throughout the morning, then check your chicken flocks for mites. When bright yellow aconites bloom, then spread fertilizer in the field and garden so that it can work its way into the ground before spring planting. When the first daffodil foliage is 2 inches tall, then go to the swamp to find skunk cabbage in bloom. When you see sparrows courting, then cut branches of pussy willow shrubs as well as from forsythia and silver maples for forcing indoors. When the first knuckles of rhubarb emerge from the ground, then it's time to plant your onion sets directly into the ground and seed your cold frames with spinach, radishes, and lettuce. When strawberry plants have new leaves, then wildflower season has begun in the southwest and bald eagles lay their eggs in the upper Rocky Mountains. And when you see tulip foliage emerging, then horned owlets hatch in the woods. When you see ducks looking for nesting sites, then you know that salamanders will be mating in the night. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the very first week of early spring. In the meantime, start getting ready. Remember, if one thing happens, then something else is happening too.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WISO.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. I'm Jerry Kenney. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.